Angelique Kitcho and Nicolas Stehmann are the two associate artists of the Holland Festival 2022. This year's festival will feature three productions by Stehmann. I'm gonna meet him today in Musikgebau an der Eye. Now we're talking because you are one of the two associate artists of the Holland Festival. What does it mean to you to be the associate artist of the festival?
I'm very happy to be here. And of course, it's a great honor to have this position, you know, of being able to present several works in a festival and even be part of the surrounding program and give impulses for the topics and so on. I was very, very happy when the people from Holland Festival asked me to. Also, since 2.5 years, I'm not only director, I also run a theater. And our idea always was to connect to other institutions and also to travel a lot, we're in Switzerland, in Zurich, but it's like this German Stadttheater, state theater systems. Normally they don't tour a lot. You know, they're doing repertory and they don't need to tour. And we wanted to change that. We wanted to have a German-style repertory theater that also was able to be touring on the international scale. This hasn't happened so far because everything was postponed and cancelled due to Corona. And now, I mean, let's keep fingers crossed this time now is over and we can be traveling again. And so I'm very happy to be here in Amsterdam and be presenting some of my works, but also some of the works that we as a theater produce.
Contre-enquête, Der Besuch der alten Dame, and Kein Licht are three pieces directed by Nicolas Stehmann and are programmed on the Holland Festival. His work is in some sense about the destructive power of capitalism and the ecological catastrophe we are facing.
How do you select a text? So, or what attracts you when you're reading a text? And when do you start thinking about staging a text? Because reading is something different and reflecting on the text and deciding just to do it.
Yeah, it's a complex procedure to have this choice, and it takes very long for me. And I very often change the decisions. And for dramaturgs and also for theater artistic directors, it was always very difficult to, you know, to nail me to a choice for a text, because even when I'm in the process of rehearsing, I still think, wow, this doesn't lead anywhere. I doubt a lot, and I think this is part of my artistic process. You know, I question the text. It's not that I don't necessarily need to like a text to be able to stage it. I need to respect it. I need to feel a strength in it and a power, and somehow I need to know that it is a partner, even, you know, when I work against it or when I question it or challenge the text, which happens a lot with the texts of Elfriede Jelinek, where I challenge it or I oppose to the text. I have other opinions to things that she writes about. And in the best case, this becomes theatrical energy. I like that. You know, I like it's two poles. It's the text and it's us theater people creating something, and then there's a dialogue or a conflict, even, you know, or a fight between these two poles. And for this, I need the text to be strong. If it's just a text, you know, who needs one certain theater form, and if you, as a director, you don't give this theater form to the text, then it's broken. That's difficult, and these texts are a bit too weak for me. And I've done also this. That's probably why of the contemporary playwrights, Elfriede Jelinek has such an importance for me, because this method works very well with her texts, and she's so strong, and it's indestructible. And on the other hand, it's unstageable, right? So she also needs someone challenging her. And like, if you take well-made play authors, which Dürrenmatt is close, you know, Besuch der alten Dame somehow is a well-made play, and I challenge it with a different form. then the text needs something else that is strong in there. And for instance, with Besuch der alten Dame, it is the moral question or the political question, the fable, how do you call it in English, the fabula, the story somehow, or the moral of it, that it's really dark and daring and so on. And it's not really the language, it's not really the, you know, the way that it's written or so, but it's more the content. And something like this needs to be there, otherwise, yeah, it's too easy to destroy these texts. And I don't want that. I want the texts to help to reveal their power.
Kein Licht is a Beckettian endgame about controllability of technology. It's based on the nuclear disaster in Fukushima. Can you tell a little bit more about the content of the play?
Yeah. In the first part, initially, Elfriede Jelinek started to write it right after the accident in Fukushima. So right after this nuclear catastrophe, and very much under the influence of the images that you saw on TV and the stories that you heard about that. And then it becomes more and more a reflection upon technology in general and the question, how can we control what we have built? And when we created it, it was in Ruhrgebiet, Ruhrtriennale, so in the coal mining area of Germany. And the question rose whether it's nuclear energy is the only problem, and stepping out of nuclear energy solves the problem or not. And at the moment we're facing this vast output of CO2, and we're heading for a global collapse of the ecological system that is related to our hunger for energy. And there is no answer. And so this it becomes the topic more in general.
How do you deal with certain topicality? Because as a theater maker, you just get your inspiration by the reality, by news. And when is something interesting to translate it into a theatrical context? And how do we approach current events to make theater out of it?
I mean, theater always has these two poles. You know, we're always playing in the present. It's always the audience is present, the artists are present. We're dealing in the present, but we're also talking about old myths and we're dealing with old texts and so on. So we have this tension between past and present all the time. That's very theatrical, and I like to stress that. And that's why I'm very interested to let things that actually happen and maybe happen today and are dated by tomorrow, to let them into my productions and let them be part, like, of the art, if you want. And I think that's what theater is about. Talk about what's going on at the moment, but do it in a way that is more visionary than maybe just the news can be.
This is what is left of Europe. This is what is left of Europe.
And can you tell us about the play?
It's a small village, and they're doing bad. They need money. A woman comes back that used to live in this village when she was a little girl. And now she's a billionaire. She's the richest woman of the world. And she comes back, and everybody expects her to give them money and to help this poor village. And indeed she is aiming to do so, but she has a condition, and she says, I'll only do that if you kill a certain person who lives amongst you, and he's an honorable citizen, he's going to be mayor of this town, an old man, and he used to be her lover, and he left her when she was pregnant, and so she was driven out of the village. So she wants revenge, and the play is about the people in this village who refuse this offer, and they say, we are in Europe, we are not barbarians, dear lady, we won't kill someone. And little by little, this idea, maybe we could kill someone for money, gets more and more present. And this is what the play shows, how the villagers somehow lie to themselves and start, you know, kind of double think. They act differently to what they think they do or who they want to be. And for Dürrenmatt, it was questioning the humanism. And like 10 years after the war, this play was written. And I think people knew quite concrete, you know, if someone knocks at your door and say there's an open bill and you have to pay it, they had concrete images of who could that be after this war. What open bills are there? And what interested me to stage it today, we also know, we, if someone says you are guilty of something and you should be punished for that, we might know who that is. Now with all this post-colonial debates and the colonial crimes, for instance, but also the ecological catastrophe, we know what we have done wrong as a collective. And all these aspects are in this play, and how far would we go for money, how far would we go for our style of living, how destructive are we going to be, and how much do we think we are not. So this is somehow the essence of the play.
First the shoes are delivered, then comes the moral. Is that what is left of European humanism?
I mean, it's definitely an image of how we live and maybe of what's the essence of our life. And there's so much going, you know, so much talking going on about European values. We can ask, what are these values? Are these really humanist values, or is it also just, consumism? What is ruling our society? What keeps them running? And I'm afraid that consumism rules, and we know how destructive that is. And, you know, the destructive forces of capitalism and the destructive forces of our way of living. And I think Dürrenmatt found a nice image there, and I made it bigger. I made it my stage design, you know. So we flood the stage in yellow shoes. And the conditions for these yellow shoes is a murderer that we are about to commit. But we, you know, we put it to the future. So we think we don't do it. We think we're not guilty. But somehow we put the guilt to the future. It will come.
Let's talk about the third production, Contre-Enquête. And it was written, it's a novel by writer Kamel Daoud. So what kind of power relation do we see in the performance?
We have two books. And one is the iconic French existentialist literature masterpiece, Nobel Prize acclaimed and everything. And the other is a perspective of an Algerian writer, contemporary writer, who asks the right question. Why does this one character who is killed has no name? Why is he only called the Arab? And has that to do with colonialism? And so somehow we have the conflict between these two positions. I chose to stage it with two actors, and to confront it, or it was inevitable to confront it with the question: who is allowed to talk about these subjects? It interested me, since I did it in Lausanne, but also for France. We played in Paris and Marseille and lots of other French cities, to confront the French public with this topic of colonial history, because it's really hidden. Everybody knows it, but it's very recent that people talk about it, all the colonial crimes. It's alike in the Netherlands, by the way. I think in France it's even more public than here. It's even more hidden here. And to have a show that deals with this topic, and then the question is who is allowed to tell this? Am I allowed? Who am I? Am I am the I'm a German, who, so we are playing with these questions that are very present at the moment in the arts and in the theater. Who is allowed to represent and who isn't, and which voices are amplified and which aren't. And so one of the actors is, he is of Marroquin family, and is French, and the other is French as well, but from an Algerian family, but a family of Pieds Noirs, so of the colonizators. And this comes out during the performance. It's at the moment it's not clear. You just see an Arab and a French guy, you know, a POC and a white guy, and at the end it comes out things are much more complex and also much more painful, and yet we need to talk about these things, and it's also right to pose this question: who has the right to tell the story?
As an associate artist, Nicolas Stemon and the Holland Festival will present the work of three other performing artists whose work has been created at the Schauspielhaus Zürich.
Why did you select these three performances for the Holland Festival?
Yeah, it was important that I don't only show my productions, but also productions of Schauspielhaus Zürich. And you will see it, they're very, very different. Treasure Harrell is dance and connected to Butuh and coming from voguing. Christopher Rüping, he takes Ring des Nibelungen together with the Turkish-German author Nejat Üzeri, who rewrites this play without any words of Wagner, and also the music, rewriting it with a collective of electronic musicians without using anything of Wagner, and giving a voice to the characters that Wagner didn't give a voice and that Wagner forgot and marginalized. And Wu Zeng, that is a silent movie with an orchestra. Wu Zeng moved by the motion. It's a, they're a collective, more in fine arts, but heading a lot to theater and working with the actors from Schauspielhaus Zürich and being related art, now being in-house director at Schauspielhaus Zürich. And telling the story of Moby Dick, but focusing on the perspective of the whale, so of the victim of this, you know, this necessity to hunt and to destroy. And so you see it's a vast variety of what can theater also be. You know, we have artists from dance and from fine arts, and Christopher Rüping from theater. And this, in our work in Zurich, is very important to us to have very different voices and perspectives.
Frequently you greet the audience in advance of a show. How do you do that, and where does the idea come from to do that?
Well, I like it, you know, to be present as the artist and to welcome the people. And it has different functions. Sometimes it's also to, you know, to relax them a little. People tend to be tense and stiff in theater. They think they need to be intelligent, and they need to, or maybe something is thrown at them, or whatever, they're being attacked. And to to avoid that and to say, well, I'm here, I'm a nice guy, you are there, it's fine that you are here. Sometimes also explain a little what we're doing and so on, to, you know, to put it more down to the ground, to put it down from the pedestal that it sometimes stands on. And since it's a live art and a live event, where it's like greeting guests that you invited and that came, and I like that. I think it's a nice gesture.
Thank you, Nicolas, for your time, for being here, and see you at the Holland Festival. And I wish you a very successful and enjoyable and inspiring festival. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Holland Festival is made possible by the Ministry of Education, Culture and Science, the City of Amsterdam, production partner Amodo, main patron Fonds 21, HF business partners, private foundations, and many friends.